There's going to be a theme of hemophilia for the first few sessions, and there's a reason for that. The hemophilia group has been really trying to bring all the other groups along in our wake. We started in 1953, a lot earlier than many of the other groups, and so I think we've been able to accomplish some things that that we, over the last 10 years, we want to share with other groups. So I'll be talking a bit about hemophilia. We'll have a great couple of great sessions after that, which I'll chair, and then we'll broaden out into some of the other conditions that are here in the room. So please, if you can, can I advance these slides? Oh, I can. It's a good thing. Down to go forward. So this gives me an interactive session. So I'll give you a second to think about what this represents in the world of blood products and bleeding disorders. It's a big silo, isn't it? So this represents the cost of clotting factor concentrates for the care of people with bleeding disorders in Canada. Anybody get that right? Hands up. Nobody. Okay, now this is even harder. How much is that cost? And if you're we'll see. So think of a number in your head. How much does it cost for clotting factor concentrates in Canada, according to CBS and Héma-Québec? $250 million. Anybody within $50 million? Just Tom. So that's not very good. So, and the rest of you were lower, I am sure. Okay. That's a little silo. Think about what that represents. That represents the annual cost of all the other aspects of care delivery for bleeding disorders in Canada. And what do you think that number is? And you can think for a second now. Well, that's $20 million. Is anybody within $5 million? Nobody? Okay. So, clotting factor concentrates cost $250,000, and that's 93% of the total cost of hemophilia care. And the rest, everything else, costs 7%. So this is the silo effect. And people may be upset if I say this, but those who manage the 93% have no role whatsoever in allocating resources to care delivery. And those who allocate the 7% for care delivery, as far as I'm concerned, have no idea of, they do not care about, the cost of therapeutic products paid by provincial budgets. So it's two solitudes. What about the cost of other plasma-derived blood products for rare disorders? And these are the numbers from the annual reports of CBS and Héma-Québec. So you see the numbers there. And on the right, the increase over the last year. So we're talking about $943 million for plasma-derived products and their recombinant alternatives in Canada last year. And going up by 10% a year. It's going up by 10%, even though the prices of these products are going down dramatically. And that's because utilization is going up faster than the prices are going down. So what are some of those products? Well, you'll recognize them. Immune globulin. The number's a bit rounded off here because I had to take these from graphs from CBS, and there wasn't exact numbers, but they're close enough. Immune globulin's $320 million. Clotting factor concentrates, 245. You see that's going down. C1 esterase inhibitor going up dramatically, up to close to $60 million, and albumin, $20 million. So this is just the CBS numbers. I don't have the Héma-Québec numbers here. So my expression, penny-wise, pound foolish, good old English expression. So it's penny-wise to limit resources for care delivery when the system is being pound foolish in not optimizing utilization of blood products. And I'm not talking about reducing utilization, that maybe that can be done. I'm talking about optimizing. So if you're going to spend that money, spend it wisely. So there are three options. You know, and here I'm talking to government here. I'm talking to say, what, so they want to do a better job. They want to decrease costs, improve care. So what are their three options? Well, the number one option, of course, as we always have, is just keep doing what we're doing now. And that's probably, you know, if I go by the last 10 years, I think that's what people do. Just keep doing what you're doing now. Or, and this has been discussed, decentralize provincial budgets for blood products to hospitals so that both budgets are in the same silo and the same person is making a decision. What do we do to manage these resources? I say that would be disastrous for patients. You would have uneven care from city to city, from province to province. Some places wouldn't provide care at all. They would shunt people from one place to another, try to download to private insurance. People would become unemployable if their employer knew that their care cost $150,000 a year. So I think that's not a very good option. So number three is to invest in comprehensive care for bleeding disorders, HAE, and PID, and some of the other conditions at the same time, so that products are used for optimal benefits without overuse. I see that that's the only way to go. That makes sense. It makes sense in both ways you spell it, and I think it's dollar-wise. So, you may know that more than 80% of the clotting factor concentrates are infused in the home by the patient or the caregiver. It could be even more than 80% by now. And that proportion is increasing with HAE and PID, with sub-Q products, more and more. And this is the way to go. This is the standard of care. Why would you send people to hospital, engorge the outpatient department and the emergency departments, put people at risk by putting them in a hospital context, when they can be treated at home more effectively? So how do you optimize product utilization when all these products are being used outside of direct medical supervision in the hospital? And again, the only way is to, through expert prescription, monitoring, and long-term follow-up through comprehensive care. And this involves more than just a doctor. This involves especially a nurse coordinator and other people. So I've talked about comprehensive care. What is it? So back in 2006, at our first conference, we defined comprehensive care. That was the major outcome of that first meeting, was to come up with 14 characteristics of comprehensive care. And this applies to, the 14 apply to all of these conditions. Certain characteristics don't apply. What are they? Well, provincial designation. It would be great if province, these are very rare disorders. They need to be treated in specialized centers of excellence. You don't want people being treated across the province. So provinces need to decide, how do we organize our care for these conditions? A national registry, so you know how many patients you're dealing with and what their outcomes are. Home administration of products, when you can do that. And that's certainly the case for HAE, PID, and bleeding disorders. Patients' associations have to be involved in the care. In care. What did we hear last night? No, nothing about me without me. At the SIPO dinner last night, patients have to be contributing to how care is organized. Formal education programs for families. Standards of care. You have to define exactly what these centers are supposed to do. Decentralization. It doesn't mean that everybody has to live in downtown Toronto to have access to care. But their care in the outlying areas needs to be coordinated by those centers that have the expertise. Interdisciplinary care. This is probably the most important. It's not just about a doctor. It's about the nurse coordinator and, depending on the condition, physiotherapists, social workers, OBGYNs, and you can fill in the blanks for your own conditions. Define core services. Define what they're supposed to do. Program accreditation. Don't just set up the program, evaluate it, accredit it. National collaboration among healthcare providers. These are rare disorders with limited expertise across the country. Doctors and nurses and others have to get together and create a national network where they share their expertise. Post-marketing surveillance of drugs. Blood products cause adverse reactions. These need to be followed. Collaborative national research. We have to be able to show the outcomes. of the $943 million spent on blood products. Show the outcomes. Gather the data. And flexibility in organization. You know, in Newfoundland, it's not going to be the same as downtown Toronto. Downtown Toronto, you may have the numbers to have individual clinics for each of the diseases. In a place like Newfoundland, you probably have one center of excellence for rare blood disorders. So we did some surveys. This is adapted from an article that was published in Transfusion and Apheresis Science a few years ago. I've updated it with the help of some of the disease groups here. Green is good. Red is not so good. And so you see here are the first seven of those characteristics and some of the disease. So this is what the patient associations have told us about whether these 14 characteristics are in place or not. And you see that we are ahead in hemophilia. We've been doing this for 60 years, and we've got lots of things in place. But provincial designation only in four provinces, and our standards of care are outdated. So we have a way to go as well. And with regard to the other conditions, lots of red X's. And you see with the next seven characteristics. I mean, sickle cell disease, Montreal and Toronto is doing much better. Thalassemia is doing much better than they were 10 years ago. National collaboration among healthcare providers, this is key, and it's limited in some conditions. So you may disagree with some of these, but this is what we've been told by our patient organizations, and I think it's fairly close to the truth. So the big question, and the whole reason for this conference, is what evidence is there that comprehensive or integrated care in the context of rare disorders actually leads to better outcomes? Without being able to present this evidence, it's going to be very difficult to convince governments to invest resources. So we've been trying, and these are rare disorders. People don't do a lot of studies. They don't collect data very much. It's hard to show. The fact that there is no data doesn't mean that these comprehensive care doesn't work. It means nobody's bothered to gather the data. So, and without evidence, progress will stall. So the purpose of this conference is to start to provide the evidence so that we can show that this care makes sense, is dollar-wise, and leads to better health outcomes. And that's the perfect lead-in to the first or the second speaker, Menaka Pai from McMaster University, who has gone ahead and with a group from the National Hemophilia Foundation in the U.S. and McMaster University actually tried to gather the evidence on whether comprehensive care is effective or not. So, Menaka.